Good morning, family. There's no place I'd rather be today than with you all. If you have your Shed Bible, we're on page 632, and we are in Isaiah chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. Isaiah 2, 1 through 5. This is what Isaiah, son of Amoz, said concerning Judah and Jerusalem. In the last days, the mountain of the Lord's temple will be established as the highest of the mountains. It will be exalted above the hills, and all nations will stream to it. Many peoples will come and say, "Come, let us go to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways so that we may walk in his paths." The law will go out from Zion and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem, and he will judge between the nations and will settle disputes for many peoples. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. Come, house of Jacob, let us walk in the light of the Lord. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Thanks, Susie. Good morning, everyone. The Lord be with you. My name is Troy, and I want to begin by addressing the curtain-shaped elephant in the room. I gave a video update for the email just a couple days ago. Here's a brief live version. A year ago, we began, we changed the way that we orient ourselves in this space. We made one section dark. We encouraged people to shift into this orientation, largely in an effort to get rid of the big, giant, empty spaces that were separating us. That was a year ago. And during that time, we've been listening. We've been praying. We've been paying attention. We've been discerning. We've been having conversations, trying to figure out how should we orient ourselves in this new Mars Hill reality when we gather for worship. Here's the punchline. It doesn't seem to make much sense to go back to a big room in the round with a bunch of chairs unoccupied separating all of us. So that's the punchline. And so there's this. This is a fairly low-cost way of at least providing, for now, a backdrop that's better than looking at a kind of dark section where you can still see the outlines of a bunch of chairs where people used to be. Okay? This is what we have right now. Thanks. Let me say also, by the way, I want to thank Dan and Terry for the ways that they always care for our building so well, in all parts of the building at all times, especially for this one. This is no small undertaking. And so grateful for you guys. Over the next couple of weeks, we're going to continue to tweak and to straighten up and to figure out what it means to. So there's more to come. I also want to say this, though, that these curtains are an opportunity. And these are an opportunity for us to begin to discern together, and I mean this, to discern together how we want to use the open spaces available in our church, in all the spaces, but in particular, this space. How do we want to use this? This is available space. Instead of it just being a secret back there, what do we want to do with it? And so as we step into 2026 in just a few weeks, Lord have mercy, Christ have mercy, Lord have mercy, we are going to begin inviting you into some spaces where we begin to dream and to pray and discern what we do with that. So I hope that you'll take us up on it. Journey with us. Let's listen. Let's pray. Let's discern together to figure out what that might mean for us. I also hope that we will together begin experiencing more often the benefits of being closer together physically. Because I think this is better. And I think there are ways we can capitalize on being together like this. And I hope that we will step into some of those ways in this upcoming year. Okay, be on the lookout for all those kinds of things. Thank you. PSA over. Thank you. Pickleball. I am grateful for your already eager participation. Thank you very much. Dan, that will be removed from the live stream. No permanent record that this happened at all. Friends, if we would have been able to gather last week, you would have heard me, as Tim did, you would have heard me say these words, Happy New Year, friends. Because we're in this season of Advent, and that means for the Church of Jesus that we step into a new year together. It's just a reminder that Advent and the church calendar, it reminds us that we organize and we mark time differently as God's people. Not better, just differently. It's different than a civic calendar. We seek to mark time, organize time, think about time in relation to Jesus. Jesus' life, death, resurrection, ascension, and ministry. That's the way we seek to organize our time and allow that to be what instructs us. And so I'm happy to be in this new season and year with you. And for the Sundays of Advent, we're going to be focusing on the book of Isaiah and turning our attention to a prophet's vision. You're only going to get three of them after all. Today I'm sort of a bit of a hybrid of what I was going to do last week and a bit of a different teaching. But we'll get three shots at this. Isaiah is a massive Old Testament book. I mean, so we're going to get very little of the 50 plus chapters that are in Isaiah over these next couple of weeks. I will say this, just for a little bit of context, it's generally agreed and understood that the first 39 chapters of Isaiah were written by a man actually named Isaiah, an historical man. A man actually lived named Isaiah, and he wrote the good chunk of this, the opening of this book. And he lived in Jerusalem. He lived in Jerusalem around 8th century BCE. And this was a time in the life of God's people that was really, really traumatic and difficult. In particular, because of a group of people called the Assyrians. The Assyrian Empire, it was expanding and it was conquering everywhere, everyone. And that included the two kingdoms, Judah and Israel. They're both going to eventually fall to the Assyrian Empire. This is a really difficult time for the people of God. So Isaiah is being written during this time. And so it's a book that's full of judgment. It's a book that's full of challenge, reacting to, responding to what's happening in the life of the people. But Isaiah is also full of unparalleled visions of hope. I wonder, does anyone feel like hope is kind of hard to come by these days? Thank you for that hand. I wonder, does anyone feel like your reserves of hope are running pretty low? I wonder, are any of you growing tired of hoping? I wonder if any of you could use a little injection of hope. It might seem like an unlikely source, but this Old Testament book has so much hope for us. So much hope. And yes, I know that there's a lot in our world that needs to be challenged, a lot that needs to be named, a lot that needs to be brought under the judgment of God. But I want to do this for these 3 weeks and for our Christmas Eve gathering coming up. I want to concentrate on and I want to centralize hope. And I want to do that even at the risk of maybe appearing a little tone deaf, a little naive, a little cowardly. I'm running that risk because I think every one of us need postures and imaginations that are filled with and animated by hope. So that's what we're going to do for a couple of weeks. And we're going to look backwards to a person who was looking forward. And he was looking forward with a lot of hope. And so as we do that, let's borrow some of that hope if we need it. Let's get swept up into that hope if at all possible. And as we look at this book, let's allow this prophet's vision to shine a bright light on the hope of the coming of God, who is coming to rule and to reign and to restore. That's the hope we're giving our attention to. In other words, I want to be on the lookout for the hope of the good news. And that's what I want to do today. Isaiah 2, 1 through 5, just a couple of verses, but I want to look at this so that we might be on the lookout for the hope of the good news that we find in this prophet's vision. Ready to go? Great. Let's begin this way. I'm going to begin with the center of the good news. You're going to hear me talk about the good news a lot. I'm going to talk about the center of the good news. The vision that the prophet has, it looks like this. We've heard it, but let's look at it again. In the last days, the mountain of the Lord's temple will be established as the highest of the mountains. It will be exalted above the hills, and all nations will stream to it. Right out of the gates, here's what I want to stress. I hope is very, very clear for all of us, that the center of the good news, all throughout the Bible, but in particular, the center of the good news that we find here in Isaiah, the center of the good news is not a what, the center of the good news is a who. I know that we're talking about mountains and temples and hills. The center of the good news is a who. The vision begins with the Lord's temple. Reminder, the temple is the physical manifestation. It's the physical marker of God's presence. The temple is more than just a place where worship happens. The temple is, it's God's physical presence on the earth. Okay? Jesus is eventually going to be challenged by some religious authorities, and he's going to respond to them speaking these words. He's going to say, "Destroy this temple, and I will raise it again in 3 days." This happens in the book of John. And then the writer of John, the Gospel of John, the writer is going to helpfully fill in the blanks just a few verses later for us and say this: Jesus is talking about his own body. Jesus is not talking about, Isaiah ultimately is not talking about a what, but a who. Jesus is talking about the person who is the physical manifestation of God's presence on the earth. Jesus is talking about the one who is God in the flesh. Jesus is the temple. I probably could have just gone to there. I'm trying to give you some. Jesus is the temple. Jesus is the one who will be exalted above all the hills. Jesus is the one who will be established as the highest of all mountains. Jesus is the center of the good news. Now that might seem really obvious. However, if you have been around religious institutions for very long, you know that sometimes other things can become the center. Other concerns, other beliefs, other physical things can become the center. And Advent, thankfully, helpfully, draws us back to the centrality of Jesus. Jesus is the center of the good news. St. Augustine, way back in the 4th century, he was stressing this in his interpretation of Isaiah and this vision that Isaiah has. Here's what Augustine wrote: the central place that they are all coming is Christ. He is the center. Because he is equally related to all. Anything placed in the center is common to all. And he says, Christ is your mountain of refuge. And this quote here that reminds us that Jesus is the center of the good news, it leads us nicely to my second observation, my second source that I hope is good news for you, and it's to talk about the expansive reach of the good news. In Isaiah's vision, it includes all nations streaming to the physical presence of God. It says multiple times, many peoples. Augustine, many other early Christian thinkers, they were all picking up on this. They were all highlighting it. They kept saying, the day is coming. Friends, hear this. The day is coming when all people will stream toward Jesus. That's good news. But imagine this proposal from the prophet. that all nations are going to stream. And imagine that in the context of this violent, oppressive reality that God's people are living in. It would make some sense if there were people who heard this. Some people, maybe many people, maybe most people who would hear this and think, well, you surely can't mean all nations. I mean, it couldn't possibly be those Assyrians, right? Especially. It couldn't possibly mean people who are violently oppressing and conquering us. You don't mean all people, right, Isaiah? And then and now, it's very tempting to hear about this expansive reach and to feel a kind of, well, a kind of resistance, or at least a kind of hesitation. I mean, Troy, you surely don't mean all people, right? Right? I mean, what about those who believe that that is okay? And what about those who read the Bible and they come to that conclusion? Or what about those who reject this particular truth? And what about those who think that that behavior isn't a problem? You surely don't mean all people, right? The Bible consistently, continually, faithfully pushes against our tendency to disqualify some from the expansive reach of the good news. Let me say it again. The Bible consistently, faithfully, regularly, passionately, I would even say, pushes against our tendency to disqualify some from the expansive reach of the good news. That's good news. That is pushing against that tendency. Drama. The prophet's vision is a wildly expansive vision that's reaching farther and wider than we could ever imagine. When I read this vision here, when I read about all nations streaming, I think about how Jesus describes himself in John as a good shepherd. And one of the things that makes Jesus a particular and unique good shepherd is that Jesus says that he has sheep from outside of the pen that you and I think is the current full reality. Jesus says, I have sheep from a pen that are not this one. The care and the reach of the Good Shepherd is so much wider. It's so much more gracious. It is so much more inclusive than we could ever comprehend. That expansive reach seen here, even in Isaiah, is such good news. And it's good news maybe especially for churches who, well, because there are some churches, frankly, who are smaller than they used to be. Imagine that. There are churches that continue to experience small attendances and having to face really difficult conversations and having to face new realities. I finished a book recently called Why Religion Went Obsolete. And it's brilliantly researched by a really respected sociologist out of Notre Dame. And so it was really fascinating, and it was also really sobering. Because the book traces, particularly for post-boomers, traces how post-boomers, in their trends, in their activities, in their attitudes, how they are increasingly rejecting and they are increasingly leaving organized religion. Every generation becoming more and more pronounced. Really sobering. But this prophet's vision, and the vision that we get throughout the Bible, it's reminding us that even these trends are temporary. Because guess what? The day is coming. The day is coming when all nations will stream to Jesus. That's good news. Let's keep going. Catch a glimpse of the radical impact of the good news. We read in verse 3 this, many peoples, there it is again, many peoples will come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the temple of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways so that we may walk in his paths. Friends, this vision keeps getting better and better. Here is a vision of nations outside currently of the family of God, nations who will come wanting to be taught by God. Do you see this? People are going to want to be taught by God. They're going to want to know God's ways, and they're going to want to walk in God's paths. Can you believe it? And then we get this picture. We get this picture of the radical impact of the good news. It keeps going. The law will go out from Zion. The word of the Lord from Jerusalem. God will teach. God will give the law. God will teach people. He will judge between the nations and will settle disputes for many people. They will beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. And for many, here is the climax of all hopeful visions. God will teach people. And God will be the one who will oversee all of the conflicts and all of the disputes. God will be the one who finally establishes what is right and wrong for all people. God will be the ultimate judge. Justice with a capital J will be realized in all lands. God's rule and God's reign will finally be actualized. And a massive consequence of people being taught by and people being ruled by God is that we won't need to fight one another anymore. That's the vision. Not because suddenly we all become pacifists. That's not it. Do you see why it happens? Because God is now the judge. God is the one who sets everything right. God is the one who decides. We won't need to create arsenals. We're not going to need to stockpile weapons so that we can threaten one another, so that we can display the kind of damage we could potentially do to one another. We are not going to need to train for physical combat. We're not going to need to decide who's right and who is wrong by whoever can just beat up the other one. That's not how it's going to be anymore. God will be the ultimate authority, and God's ways will be known. Everyone, all people will seek to walk in those ways. So all of these weapons, they can be transformed into tools that are actually good for all people. What a vision. Way back in the second century, a Christian thinker named Tertullian, he wrote this, thinking about the prophet's vision. He says that is, all of this is to say that the minds that were once fierce and were cruel, they're changed by the gospel. They're changed by the good news. And they're changed into good dispositions productive of good fruit. That's the radical impact of the good news. We see that in this vision. How many of you have seen this sculpture? It stands outside of the United Nations in New York City. This sculpture, which is depicting this very image from Isaiah, this image given to the U.S. from the former Soviet Union, USSR. This image depicting this vision. I read one commentator who said that she clings to these words in Isaiah because they give her hope that the good news can have an actual impact and make an actual difference in the world. Amen. Let it be so. And then finally, I want to draw your attention to the immediate invitation of the good news. This section ends at verse 5. And it says these words, Come, descendants of Jacob, let us walk in the light of the Lord. This is an echo. It's an echo of something that happened just a couple verses earlier. The nations say to one another, come, let us all go up to the mountain. And now we get this echo. Here we find those who are already in the family of God saying to each other, let's also go. Let's also come. Let's also submit to. Let's also be changed by this vision. Let's also come and pursue and be changed by this good news. We're also invited into the vision. So let us together walk in the light of the Lord. The light, a very Advent image, isn't it? The light. The light who is Jesus. Jesus, the one in whom is life, the life that was the light of all humankind, the light that shines in the darkness, the light that the darkness has not overcome, the light who will guide us, the light who will guide us as we make our way toward and make our way into this prophetic vision. It's important to stress that this vision is not a reality that we make happen. Instead, it's a reality, as one professor wisely wrote, this is a vision that is actually ours to practice. We don't make it happen, but it is ours to practice. We are invited to walk in the light. We're invited to trust that each faithful and each dependent step will be a tiptoe into the direction, into the realization of this vision, as we cooperate with the wise judge who is putting the world back together. Rowan Williams is always good for an inspiring quote. He wrote this, God is transforming the world. Friends, God is transforming the world. Can I say it to you again? God is transforming the world. God is transforming the world by being with and in the processes of the world. Above all, in that unique process that is a human life. The life first of Jesus, but then the lives of those who have been called, those who have been commissioned by Jesus to be like him and because of him, places where the work of God can start to blossom and expand in the world. I want to be one of those people. I want to be one of those places. I want to be one of those processes through which God will work so that the transforming reality expands and blossoms a little bit more in the world. Transformation is happening. God is doing the work. And in his kindness and his generosity towards us, God has elected to use us to realize this prophet's vision. Wow. So come, let us walk in the light of the Lord, friends. Before we come to the table to celebrate God's generosity towards us, I want to invite you into a few moments of slowing down. And I want to do that with a reflection I really appreciate. This is a reflection for Advent from Jan Richardson. And she wrote this, "The season of Advent means there is something on the horizon, the likes of which we have never seen before. So stay and sit and linger, tarry, ponder, wait, behold, and wonder. There will be time enough for running, for rushing, for worrying, for pushing. For now, stay and wait. Something is on the horizon. I want to invite you into Advent's invitation to look yet again for what is on the horizon. To slow down enough to look for hope, even when hope is hiding in unlikely places like an Old Testament prophet. In the light of the Lord, let's wait together in hope.